Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a 20-year health and ecological health reporter, currently blogging for the Huffington Post, as well as my own website, healthjournalistblog.com. I cover the spectrum between personal health, the health of the society, and the health of our habitat, planet Earth. Everything that we need for personal health to support life comes to us from the nexus of health of our planet, and that's what we talk about every day in my blogs, where you can follow me on Huffington or on Health Journalist Blog, as well as weekly on this program. And that takes in a whole bunch of dimensions, because attaining healing, whether personal healing or healing our broken relationship with our planetary habitat, or healing our communities, our society, our political system, all of that takes both a personal effort and a group effort, because none of us is really an island, and we all live together and have to co-create the health we want for ourselves, our communities, our society, and our planet. And that's what we discuss every week. I have a really terrific program for you this week, and we begin, as we always do every week, with a series of actions, and I have some really cool actions for you. First, as you know, on this show for over 2 years, we've been studying fracking, and I've had a whole bunch of guests from a whole lot of different organizations discuss the manifold problems with this new process of using heavy chemicals to bring gas up from underground. What is the current status? We've really been working hard. A bunch of people have been working really hard in the grassroots advocacy community to limit and ban fracking in the Northeast region, principally in New York State. And today brings a message from one of our advocacy groups that has been featured on this show, United for Action, about a bill in the New York State Assembly. And David Braun, who's been a guest twice on this show and is the head for United for Action, writes as follows. He says that the DEC, which is the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, may be only weeks away from introducing rulemaking for hydrofracking at the approaching end of the legislative session. And this really puts New York's water in terrible jeopardy. The state had issued guidelines but had not moved forward. So there's a bill on the assembly floor to ban fracking that's been introduced. It's, take out your pens and paper, everyone. It's called Bill A-7218B. You can call your New York State Assembly member if, in fact, you are a New York State resident at the following number. Again, take out your pen. It's 866-739-8818. And ask them to sign on and support that bill to protect New York's water, air, food, land, and people. That's a current action today. There's actually a phone blitz organized by New Yorkers Against Fracking, and you can participate by calling right now. So, moving on from that, we have some other actions as well. There's an upcoming event down in New York City to stop the Spectra pipeline. There's a fundraiser this coming Monday night, June 11th, between 6 to 9 at Pier 66. For New York City residents, this is very germane because the pipeline is what is going to bring the gas down to you to heat your buildings, to ignite your stove. The plan is, unless it's stopped, to use the gas that's mined in our region to go into New York and to use a lot more of it and replace some old building fuels. So that gas, and much of it is radioactive and carries radioactive radon, as we discussed on a previous show, that gas will be coming to you down in New York City. So that's why New York City residents may especially want to participate in the fundraiser to stop the Spectra pipeline. It's going to be at Pier 66. There's a minimal donation. You can find out more about it by going online to DamascusCitizens.org. That's DamascusCitizens, plural, .org, to stop the pipeline. And our final action is a little unusual, and this can be done by anybody, anywhere. A lot of people who are not in immediate regions of harm, whether due to fracking, nuclear accidents, other forms of pollution or political crisis, are lending support to each other through sending prayers and intentions. And there's a lovely one that someone sent me from an online group called watersongline.com, and it's an international call for healing the waterways and the earth, and offers many opportunities to pray on your own and with others. It's a collective effort to help protect the waters and Mother Earth at this time. And this is something some of the International Council of the 13 Grandmothers have been involved, lighting fires and holding ceremonies from different locations. This is a way, along with political and social action, that people who are so inclined can participate. So I just wanted to mention that. And that's also very much in keeping with today's program. On today's show, we're going to be talking about some of the intentional field and non-local of effects, the things that are happening in our greater environment on a non-visible plane that affect us and have enduring effects. And specifically, we're going to be talking about the impacts of multi-generational families on our present-day lives and situation. So now we'll switch gears, and I will bring in our guest. And I just want to say that because our theme today is families and the connection of many generations of families, I actually am doing this show today while visiting family. And I just wanted to alert you listeners, because if there are any, kind of stray guests or different noises, that may occur as I'm doing the program, to understand what you might be hearing. I don't know, it may not even happen at all, but if it does, I thought I would just prepare you. And I think it's very much in keeping with the family theme of today's Connect the Dots. So now I'll be joined by our guest today. He is Dr. Dan Booth-Cohn. He's known as a psychologist, author, trainer, and he specifically practices a method and facilitates a method called systemic family constellations, which he's going to tell us a lot more about. He also has a very interesting business background, which he may tell us a little bit more about, but his most recent work, it really is focused on using the method to free individuals and groups from the legacy of historic trauma. He's the author of a recent book, I Carry Your Heart in My Heart, Family Constellations in Prison, and he does some very interesting work in prison, and his website, which you'll hear more about, is hiddensolution.com. So welcome to Connect the Dots, Dan Booth-Cohn.
Hello, Allison. Very glad to be on the call, on the show.
Yeah, it's great to have you here.
Yeah.
So, could you just orient our listeners a little bit to family constellations?
Sure. The family constellations are an experiential process. The name itself is a bit of a misnomer. It was translated from German into English. And so when people hear for the first time, of course, they think of constellations in the sky, or perhaps it has something to do with astrology. But actually, in this use, constellations just means that individual parts are arranged in a kind of pattern or shape in relationship to each other, that you can look and perceive a pattern at a setup of individual parts. And so in terms of the family, it's looking at a family which is comprised of individuals, but if you were to set them up in three-dimensional space and look at the pattern that the family creates, you can actually perceive that there is a discernible pattern there.
So what you're saying is that this method provides a way in a workshop setting to kind of look at a recreate structurally and visibly so that people can see it, the members of a family, even many generations, and to see the patterns that are working between different family members and even different and previous generations of family members. Is that right?
Yes. Exactly, and it can be done in individual sessions as well. It can be done in a group. It can also be done in an individual session where a person can just perceive the pattern in their imagination without the group members. But the basic format is the same, either done with representatives and as in a group setting or just in one's own mind's eye in an individual setting.
Mm-hmm. So this is something that actually we have done, I think I did one or two shows on this in the past, and we're actually going to do another one too, because I have trained in this method and experienced it many, 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 many times, both as a facilitator and also as a participant, as an observer. Very powerful. I think on some level, even, you know, in a way that people can't quite reach your name, that we know, somehow we know, the average person knows that there are patterns that go on in their family, and it's really hard to see them because of the fact that we're inside them, and they're kind of bigger than we are, and they're all around us kind of thing. So this becomes so, I mean, I bet if our listeners just think about it for a second, at some level we do know that there are these larger patterns in our families, but it's really hard to get our minds around or grasp them when we're in them. So this becomes a way to do that. So what happens then when people are able to understand and see the patterns that are operating on them in this way?
Well, there's a hallmark for how to be able to tell the difference between one's own, the sorrow or emotion of one's own personal experience versus what is an inherited pattern that's coming to us from the past and is basically imposed on us either emotionally or behaviorally.
Mm-hmm.
And that hallmark is that the problem feels very deep and is extremely resistant to being improved. That the anxiety or depression or behaviors that we encounter in our lives that are problematic, and then we do therapy or we do a meditation practice or mindfulness or treat in some way, and we find that the situation improves, that is a hallmark of a problem that is personal to us.
Mm-hmm.
The problems like that that we have, that we go to therapy and we do meditation and we do this and that and we try everything, and that problem just persists, the anxiety does not seem to get better, and when we think of when it started, it feels like it's always been there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the marker of something that comes from the distant past that is basically embedded in us and is our personal efforts to change it generally fail. So this constellation process, the beauty of it and the reason that I'm devoting myself to practicing it is that the constellation process generally in just a single session in an hour or two can actually get to the root of a traumatic event from two, three generations in the past. We generally have no conscious association that that event has anything to do with us, but the constellation process, we can just follow the thread and find the source, and then we can actually release it at the source and really transform it from a source of suffering into a source of strength and blessings. And the whole thing takes about an hour or two, and it doesn't need to be repeated generally, and it can be done in a single session. So it's really a wonderful gift to many people who have been carrying burdens of anxiety or depression or certain health symptoms or repetitive behaviors, and they find that in a single session they get tremendous relief, and over time the effect of the constellation doesn't wear off, it actually deepens and strengthens, so that people are able to pursue the things that they're interested in their lives with a lot more energy and good intention.
That's very positive. You know, it's interesting because this is a although I don't I actually I've had numerous psychologists on the show and authors of books as you are and things, but you know, one of the big themes of Connect the Dots is the fact that some things are indeed individual, as we have learned to focus on ourselves as individuals and, you know, take responsibility and heal things, make choices, make healthy life choices, see what may be holding us back and all of that. But there are some things, and this is a big theme of Connect the Dots, that are really coming from outside or part of the larger context to which we belong. And an analogy that I use a lot on the show is that, you know, we can say we're going to choose to eat healthy food, but we need to support the farmers who grow the healthy food, or that food will not be available. And in fact, if our agriculture is fraught with pesticides and chemicals and other things that, you know, that go into the food or go into the water and the land, it can have a larger environmental effect, and it also can have a personal effect on us. So a constant theme of the show is the interplay between the individual and the context. And so what you're talking about, which is extremely relevant, and it's part of my own view that comes out of having done this work and doing it and everything, is that there is a place for the individual, as you mentioned, psychotherapy or meditation, to even do psychologically oriented healing, but there's also a place and a need for healing in the context. And that can always seem, the very deep rootedness that you talked about as being a signature of that, this is a multi-generational trauma or a past generational issue, that very thing is what makes it seem kind of larger than life and impossible to address. Where this method can then, you know, sort of point people to a resolution that where it can be addressed. And that's the kind of thing that our individual focus often misses, as positive as it is in other ways. Can you give some examples of this?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a client that I worked with who was a woman, 31 years old, and she came to me with a very severe case of endometriosis, which is an abdominal pain. It's has to do with tissue in the reproductive system that is misplaced, and it creates a severe abdominal pain for her, you know, with her monthly cycle. It leads to infertility and disability, and she had been affected with it from the time she was 15. And by the time she was 31, it was progressively worse, and she had tried all the treatments. And her physician said that the only thing left was to relieve this pain was surgery. She was no longer able to work because she was effectively disabled for about a week out of every month. And so she was married, so her husband worked, but she was receiving disability payments for this. And so we did a constellation for her. I did this actually in an individual session, and we the way the process works is a kind of silent and still perception. It's a kind of alert and waking meditation where in silence and stillness between the two of us, we are able to feel some content or meaning that is contained in this abdominal pain. And it takes about a while. It takes can take as much of an hour. It goes very slowly. I'm very patient. At the beginning, it's usually quite ambiguous and rather abstract and doesn't make any sense, but we just stay with the process and continue to feel and go step by step. And what we found was that in her parents, her heritage was Norwegian. Her mother's side was blonde and blue-eyed Nordic, and they were from a wealthy family, a landowning family, a banking family that was had a lot of wealth and prosperity. Her father's side of the family was short and dark-skinned, dark-haired, and he came from the indigenous Sami people of the north of Scandinavia, basically the Scandinavian Eskimos. They don't like to be called that, but just for listeners that don't know what Sami is, it's the those native people from the north. And the people from the north, of course, had been persecuted and converted to Christianity by the people of the south. And so actually there was a type of civil war that was occurring in her lineage of this Nordic from her mother's side and Sami from the father's side. And the stabbing wounds that she was feeling in her abdomen were a type of inherited memory of the persecution, the feeling of persecution of her Sami grandmothers who had been persecuted for practicing traditional medicine and traditional native spirituality. And perhaps some of them had been at some time in her lineage pierced with a sword. We can't say, you know, factually that that's what happened, but that's the type of feeling that she was carrying. We kind of felt what the emotion was that was embodied in that pain. And we then did a healing ritual where she imagined these ancestors, the Nordic ancestors with swords or spears, and the Sami ancestors with their medical native medicine and healing arts without weapons. And she was able to, in a way, feel their presence and allow them to see her in pain and ask them to help her to be free without pain. So the upshot was that we were done with the session in maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours total. And each month, her cycles came from month to month over the next number of months, the pain diminished a little bit every month, a little bit less every month. After about 6 months, she was pain-free. A couple of months that she was pregnant, and she's now the mother of a healthy baby.
What a wonderful story! Wow, mm-hmm. That's an amazing case. Wow, that's really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, beautiful healing. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting because you know, in a lot of the body mind healing approaches, it's understood that the body will carry memory and feelings from life experiences. And this method, opening the door a little further to show not only of ourselves, but also of prior generations. And how incredibly ironic that the illness she was experiencing, the symptoms that she was experiencing, were setting her up to have the medical, you know, with almost a feeling of there being no other option and no choice, were setting her up for the kind of medical intervention, which is, you know, the one that's most readily accessed in our society, the very medical intervention from the same school of thought and school of medicine that had been oppressing potentially her ancestors, you know, in the imagery that emerged. And so she was set up to kind of have almost repeat a similar kind of experience to what they had endured, whereas acknowledging what they had endured allowed her to connect even over time with people no longer alive and everything else with that mode of healing and with those ancestors to support her more gradual healing of this to continue the line. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Right. There's a symmetry to the symbolism that you've picked up on, which is that the technological Nordic kind of Western Europe side was leading her to surgery, which is basically having her abdomen cut open with a sword. And, you know, parts of her removed as a way of eliminating the pain, whereas the ritual that ended up actually relieving her is a type of ceremony. It's a ritual. I'm not, of course, I don't have any knowledge whatsoever of Sami rituals, and I don't practice from a ceremonial ritual orientation. But this process is not an intervention with a sharp piece of steel. It's an intervention in the mind's eye, in the imagination. So it's much closer to ceremony and ritual, and bringing in the memory of these native healers and their presence in her mind actually brought about the healing. So she did find that avenue back towards the traditional indigenous ways. And my orientation is not to turn away from medicine and doctors or psychologists or therapists. They serve a wonderful purpose and they help many, many people. But this other side has really been excluded in their model. And I'm a proponent for a balanced approach that when surgery is really indicated, that people can get the surgery. But we can also look at remedies that are non-surgical, non-intervention, and make space for those in our healthcare system because there's actually a lot of power in those, and they're obviously less side effects and can be very effective.
Yeah, that's a fantastic story. We're actually, I think that's right. That's exactly right. It's not that, there's a need to be antiquated and turn back the clock and reject useful tools and therapies. It's really about including all our resources, because sometimes the more extreme measure, which itself carries consequences, surgery, carries consequences. All of these, everything that the stronger the dose, the more the consequences, the more the risk of potentially negative consequences. So, but it's not to exclude that when it's needed, it's needed, but it's also not to exclude these other gentler resources. So thank you, Dan. That's terrific. We are coming up on the break time of our show for station identification, and so I'm going to ask our listeners to please stay with us here on Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and we'll continue the conversation with Dr. Dan Booth-Cohn after station identification. Please stay with us. Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and again, we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, connecting the dots between personal health and your total health environment. Today's guest on my show is Dr. Dan Booth-Cohn, a psychologist and the author of I Carry Your Heart in My Heart, Family Constellations in Prison. And he's been sharing with us a wonderful method of finding resolution and healing larger issues in our life through addressing ancestral patterns in a method called family constellation work that he practices. His website, for those who've been listening, is worth checking out, and that's where you can find out about his upcoming events or how to reach him for a session, and that is hiddensolution.com. So please do check that out, and you can also get copies of his book there, find out his touring schedule, and read more about the work as well, and we'll be discussing it more here in the second half hour. So thanks for staying with us and for joining us, for new listeners tuning in. Dan, in the first half, we really were talking about the method and the power of this approach, how it works, and what it teaches us and has to offer. I also wanted to bring in, some of some of the areas of caution or concern with modern psychological or psychiatric diagnosis and naming of people's problems, sort of codifying them, and then you know, treating them as a medical problem rather than a sort of unrest of the psychology or something like that, and then treating it with, you know, pharmaceuticals or categorizing people, you know, and all of that, that you have been concerned about recently.
Yes. One of the something that has my attention, of course, and people, when they hear about constellations, it's a question that comes up frequently, is people will say some version of the question, well, if what you're doing is so great, how come I've never heard of it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to consider that, and I've also noticed, I've had conversations, of course, with psychiatrists and psychologists and other practitioners, medical practitioners as well as psychological practitioners, and it is, the doors, for the most part, have been closed in my face. I do have a PhD in psychology, so I have the education and I have the credential, and I have, you know, 30 years of experience in as a professional in a lot of different areas, so I'm credentialed in that sense. But I really have to explore, try to understand what is it about what I am doing that is bringing up, creating so much resistance from my professional peers. And so I've become a student of the history to some extent and try to really understand what the present medical model, healthcare system looks like. And so what I have recognized in doing this is that there are four, you know, kind of, you know, global scale institutional entities that have created our modern healthcare system and mental health system over the last century. Those are universities, which both conduct the research that create the evidence base that the treatments are based on, and they also operate the medical schools, and they also have a ownership interest in the teaching hospitals. So accepted practices come out of that institutional system. They are connected in with licensed professionals. The licenses are provided by the governments, the state government, but there's also the federal government is involved, local governments, both in terms of credentials and also in terms of reimbursements of what's covered and what's not covered. And that ties in, of course, to the private insurance companies because the government sets certain rates, but the private insurance companies are then delivering services, providing the flow of money. And the fourth entity are the medical product manufacturers. And between those four large entities, which is, you know, it's on a global scale, they have created the current system, the current paradigm that we have.
Mm-hmm.
For managing people's health and their mental health. And
mm-hmm.
the paradigm is basically, it's based on a diagnosis and a treatment.
Mm-hmm.
If patient X has condition Y, then prescribe remedy Z. And
mm-hmm.
so if, you know, someone may not have a condition, they may just be feeling crappy. They may
mm-hmm.
just feel, they may wake up in the morning and have difficulty getting out of bed and doing what they need to do. And it's just a feeling that is coming over them. They don't necessarily have a label or a name for it, but if they go see a licensed professional, they will get a diagnosis according to the, if it's a medical symptom or a mental health system, they will be diagnosed with condition Y. If they have condition Y, then they have to do something about it. They have to do, they either get a prescribed remedy or told that they need to, you know, cheer up or whatever it is. So there's that basic algorithm. Patient
mm-hmm.
X has condition Y, prescribe remedy Z.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, it basically puts the power of healing into the hands of the professionals. Mm-hmm. The professionals then know what the problem is and what to be done about it, more so than the person who's actually suffering. It's not really empowering the person who has these symptoms. It is taking recognizing that the knowledge base is outside, it's with the experts, based on, you know, these interlocking entities, and the knowledge base is there, and the person just has to basically, this is what's wrong with you, and this is what you should do about it. And, of course, what you should do about it flows through an economic system, which is designed the way the healthcare system has worked. It's designed to keep people alive and make sure that they don't really get better, because they become a revenue source for a multitude of professionals. There's payment opportunities all up and down the line. And if someone is diagnosed with depression or anxiety, that's usually a lifelong sentence of having to take a medication. That's where, you know, where that goes. But you see it on the medical side as well, where diabetes gets treated. Type 2 diabetes is treated, but it's not prevented. There's hardly anything that goes to prevention. It's all going towards treatment. And you can see that with a lot of other medical conditions that are preventable, but the money doesn't go to prevention, it goes to treatment, and the treatments are long-term or you know, really lifetime treatments. So that's the model that I'm up against, or that Family Constellations is kind of trying to enter into, and the paradigm of Family Constellations is really incompatible with that model.
Mm-hmm.
The paradigm of Family Constellations is that the condition Y has the patient. Not that the patient or the person has the condition, but the condition has the patient. So in the example of the constellation that I gave you, this pattern, this habit in the family of stabbing pain in the abdomen, it is older, much older, generations older than the woman that has the pain. So in that sense, the pain has her. She's born into the memory of her family history and picks up that memory, and it becomes expressed as stabbing pain in her abdomen. And so the remedy then is not to do something about it. The remedy is to just recognize it for what it is to release the pattern, is to see the habit and to find a way, an intervention that dissolves the pattern and frees her from it. And at that point, it's not really about doing anything. The body then finds its own way towards self-regulation, and the power to heal exists within her, and with the condition, this habit or family memory removed, her body is able to find its own way back into balance. So it's generally, when I work with people, it's one time. So, and then the rest is up to them. So that's my best answer for why, if what you're doing is so great, no one's ever heard of it. And mm-hmm. it is also a critique of our mental health system and our medical system. And the other, I'm going on a bit, but just the last point of that, particularly with mental health, is this. We have been really sold a bill of goods through this system that mental health problems are caused by imbalances in brain chemistry. That was an idea that was floated a long time ago, 30 years ago. It was never demonstrated. It's long been debunked, but most people continue to have it in their minds that psychiatric meds are used to correct an imbalance in brain chemistry, and there's no medical evidence that supports it. The medical evidence refutes it, but the notion lives on for obvious reasons. So
obvious reasons being that it's a means to sell products. products over costly products over, you know, an extended time period. So instead of to use your metaphor, instead of which is really an interesting one, instead of the imbalance, let's say, having the person, it's now the medical system that has the person.
Yes.
Or that, you know, it has the person both in terms of naming their problem, it has it in terms of selling them products, and it has the person in terms of our believing that story and all of that. So there is natural healing within an individual, as you mentioned. I think on some level there's also natural healing within systems. So, you know, if the system has us, which is very counter to how we think, whether it's our family system or the medical system or our government system, you know, we exist within these things. If they kind of have us, I think the sense that we can heal, that our natural life force can always heal within an imbalanced system is also, if we don't feel it, it's kind of a double bind. If we don't feel it, then we're helpless. There's nothing we can do. We've inherited a sense of helplessness from being in these larger systems that feel larger than life and so overpowering. So if we're helpless, that doesn't work. But if on the other hand we say, well, I can heal within this despite that, that may not be entirely true either if one, you know, continues to be, as we all are, subject to the larger influences and pressures of the greater context, whether our family or society to which we belong. So, you know, here I'm going to ask you a question. Is there, we've had several generations of well-intentioned health leaders and people like yourself telling us we can individually heal within these imbalanced systems. But, you know, maybe, and in the case of that you shared in the first half hour where someone had an amazing recovery from a pattern of endometriosis as a result of the intervention that you and she did together, and she was able to heal that. But do systems have natural healing impulses that work through us? Because if we have very imbalanced systems, you know, that are kind of leaning on us, whether from the family or, as you're pointing out, from the medical structure of our time, what are the natural systemic forces of healing to redress that? That's a tough question.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question, and I think it's very important to recognize. We have reached the natural limit of fixing ourselves as a remedy for our lives. It's no longer enough to just think about how to deal with our own inner disturbance and get ourselves balanced. We really need to be thinking systemically and become citizen activists in wherever our handhold is in the world. We have to find a way to influence and move systems, and I think the strongest impulse towards that, towards the systems have for healing, is that we are getting close to driving ourselves extinct. That the political and the social and the economic systems that humanity has created is. There are 20,000 species a year that are going extinct. And through the course of natural history on the planet, typically it's been about 1,000 species a year that go extinct in any given year. And that 20-fold increase is because of human activity. And our time is coming. We can see the Fukushima accident. We can see the collapsing economy. We can see this issue of fracking, where we're going to try to just pull a little bit more hydrocarbon out of the ground and pollute our water supply with it for a few years of heat, a temporary fix, but basically motivated by just enriching the corporate entities that are pulling the gas out of the ground and the people that have to then deal with the pollution that it leaves in its wake are going to have to deal with that for years and years after those companies are have exhausted the supplies there. And so we see it in many different places. And there is, in human consciousness, there's a very strong impulse to survive, that we want to have our children, our grandchildren, our nephews and nieces, the younger generation of children, and not only of our own, but grandchildren, three or four generations down. I mean, if you try to imagine what the world's going to look like in a century from now, and what kind of world babies born in 2112 are going to be inheriting, and what that's going to look like, well, the fact that we're feeling better about ourselves is it's not enough.
It's laughable, really.
Right.
It's just like a joke. You know?
Right. It's insufficient. It's an insufficient response.
Uh-huh.
To that we have to use our energy and our intelligence. I mean, in a way, it has to start. If we're personally disturbed, if we can't put our shoes on in the morning because we're feeling enveloped in a dark cloud, well, that's the first priority, is to, mm-hmm. you know, get us to get dressed and eat breakfast and out the door doing what we need to do. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that is a first priority, but once we have kind of righted the ship in that way and found a way to live with our inner disturbances so that they're not overwhelming us, then we really need to look at these collective systems. And I definitely think that, humanity has survived for a couple hundred thousand years. We're at a time in history that is unlike any other in terms of consciousness and intelligence. We have, through the internet and our transportation technologies, for the first time ever, we have all of the cultural traditions of all the people in the world are available to us. We can study Kabbalah. We can study Buddhism. We can study cognitive science. All of this is at our fingertips, and it is begging us to expand human consciousness and our ways of living together and living on the planet in a way that allows us to survive for centuries, if not millennium, and not continue this march towards extinction which we're on.
So the takeaway message is, you know, to the old Nostrum, if the plane is going down, before you help another, put on your own oxygen mask. But some spend a lifetime just getting the oxygen mask on. So the message is, put it on rapidly and then turn to help others. Don't become endlessly perfectionistic and finicky over your getting that oxygen mask on. Obviously, if you're not wearing it, you're not going to be able to do much. So get it on, push aside the obstacles, get it on, and then turn to help others and to hopefully, if need be, if we have a bad pilot, or someone has taken over the controls and is pointing our vehicle in the wrong direction, like on a plane or something, let's get control of the driver, the driving instruments. Groups of us can try to do it at strategic places. And so that's also, this is a new definition of healing.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Make those phone calls to the state legislatures that you announced at the beginning of the call. Support the farmers markets. And everybody has a place, a lever of influence in their own lives.
That's
in
right.
Some ways in these systems. We're participating in these systems, we're going along with it, and we all have opportunities to exert some influence in one regard or another beyond simply trying to make ourselves feel better and then just kind of go along with everything.
Yeah, like that's a good thing to do. Well, I think that that makes a lot of sense. It's really interesting when, with the theme of connect the dots, which has to do with looking at larger systems. I mean, that's basically the theme of the show and of all of the, work that I do. It's so interesting to bring in the psychological component of it and see that even that, the thing that we think most intimately lives within our own, mind, head, identity, and experience, that, you know, that even there, that place is so private, you know, that we're part of a wider experience. You know, it's interesting too that the message, the counter message, the message that you were mentioning that we've imbibed and believed that we're just, you know, it's just all about a few brain chemicals bubbling away within us, buying into that message, is actually, you know, as you say, it's not medically proven, but buying into it, being led to think that it is true, learning to think of ourselves that way, actually is so limiting and so isolating and so, it so strips away our sense of resource. Oh, it's just a few chemicals. What could I possibly do other than ... take something? You know, it so strips away the kinds of resources that we need for survival to think that way. And so whether or not this was simply introduced because it's a method of selling products which could make somebody money, you know, that's probably the primary intention of sending out and selling us through advertising, et cetera, on those cultural messages. But the net effect of thinking that way is really social control. You know, it disables the healthy response that has kept mankind surviving and going for centuries. And yet when you've been on the receiving end of social messages that tell you this is what's true, you know, you will, it's really hard not to take that in and believe it, and then believe oneself accordingly to be, well, there's nothing much I can do. And so we can talk about empowerment as we have in the healing arts for so long, but unless we're really acting on empowerment beyond the self, then how empowered is that? I mean, is it really empowering to say, I'm so empowered, you know, I can clean my room? You know? I mean, the room of me and my identity. Well, you know, if your room is a mess, obviously it has to be cleaned, and it is a good way to start and everything. Nothing wrong with that. But that doesn't sound to me like empowerment. Now, I see that we are coming down to our final moments. I want to send people to hiddensolution.com. Thank you, Dr. Dan Booth Cohen. And tell our listeners to be back with me next week, a week from today, Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time for Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy with you here on the Progressive Radio Network. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us. Thank you so much for being with me and my guest today, and thank you, Dan Booth Cohen, for all you do. Mm-hmm.